Thank you, Mr. Pardian. Delightful afternoon to everyone. Pay no attention to the poison ivy in my red eyes. Eventually, it'll go away, right? 15 years ago this week, a horrendous tornado, which was 1 mile wide, hit the city of Joplin, Missouri, just 40 miles from where we're meeting today. And the tornado was devastating. Enormous property damage. It kind of ripped off one side of a hospital, and many lives were lost. Well, we live in a part of the world in the Midwest where wind is simply part of life. It's just the way it is. The wind is blowing, and it changes. The change of wind brings in the weather. So if it's windy, you're going to know there's going to be a change in the weather. Now, I used to live and work in North Dakota, and the wind blew there all the time. And the standard joke was, well, the hills are tall and rounded, and there weren't a lot of trees. And the joke in northern Minnesota was, why is it so windy in Minnesota? Well, they cut the tree down in North Dakota. If you're coming from Montana and coming into North Dakota, you see these big rounded hills, and there is literally a billboard there that says, welcome to North Dakota, mountain removal project completed, big rounded hills. Well, and there are parts of the country that have relatively little wind. I happen to live in the Willamette Valley in Oregon for 15 years in Eugene, Oregon. And there was plenty of rain, but there wasn't a lot of wind. It was all much more gentle than what we find in the Midwest. Well, there are a number of examples in the Bible where God's will was carried out and demonstrated by wind. Now, it's Pentecost, so I would be remiss if I didn't point out in Acts 2, chapter 2 and verse 1, the first two verses. When the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place, and suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind. And it filled the whole house where they were sitting. You might want to put a title on this one today as Rushing Mighty Wind. But if we look through the Bible, this whole advancement of the use of wind has really, God has used this over time. We go back to Genesis and the Genesis flood, the Noachian flood, and we look in Genesis 8 and verse 1. After the flood, God used wind to dry off the earth. Then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all of the animals that were within him, within the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. So you get a wind out, it's going to dry things off. That's why we have clotheslines, right? Well, for those of you that remember those. And much later, we had the children of Israel had migrated to Egypt, 70 in the house of Jacob. And when it was time for the exodus for Egypt, Moses was called to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. And they went into the out into the wilderness. And you have a number of occasions where the wind made a change, a dramatic change in people's lives. Exodus 10 talks about the Lord brought an east wind on the land all day and all night, and morning the east wind brought locusts. I don't like bugs. Locusts are very big bugs and very damaging, and that was very problematic for the people in Egypt, because Moses, as we start that, Moses stretched his rod over the land of Egypt. We read a few verses down in Exodus 10:19. One of the plagues, and the Lord turned a very strong west wind and took the locusts away and blew them into the Red Sea, and there remained not one locust in all the territory of Egypt. So this was used to bring in a plague, and the wind was used to take it out. Then when the crossing of the Red Sea time came for the Exodus in Exodus 14:21, Moses stretched his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. Pretty dramatic. That's a lot of wind. If you're going to divide a sea, pretty emphatic wind is blowing at that time. And while they're in the wilderness, and those 40 years in the wilderness, the people complained. You may have heard that people do complain. You may have heard people complain before. And Israelites complained that they didn't have meat. And in Numbers 11, we read how God sent quail to satisfy their need. And what was it in Numbers 11:31? It's a wind went out from the Lord and it brought quail from the sea and left them fluttering near the camp. Well, if you had a wind that came in and brought huge, now mind you, there's up to 2 million people here. Imagine how many chickens it would take to feed 2 million people. That's going to be a lot of fluttering going on. And the wind brought them in. So what a mess. But it gave an answer to their question. But the wind wasn't just in ancient Israel. And you can look up wind in many examples throughout the Bible. And when the Apostle Paul was taken prisoner and was going to be hauled off to Rome to be tried in Rome. And if you know the geography of the Mediterranean Sea, and he's heading east, and then when you get to a certain point, you head north to get up into Rome. And in Acts 27, we read, the south wind blew softly. Oh, well, that's nice. Soft wind blew southly. And that means it would take them right up to Rome. It said they sailed by Crete, an island in the Mediterranean, but not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called Euroclydon, where they get the word Euro from, a headwind. If you're a sailor, you want the wind where? You want it on your back, so it'll push you where you want to go. Well, in this case, it was a headwind. It was coming, the wind switched. It was coming straight at them. And so it didn't allow them to go directly to Rome. But this Euroclydon, a strong east wind, prevented the ship from going north to Rome, and it just kept going east. And so if you take a look on the map, the ship ultimately landed on the island of Malta, which was directly east of Crete, along a long stretch of the Mediterranean. Now, the sailors were all pretty worried, a strong wind, they had these prisoners, so they had this great idea. And we read in Acts 27, starting in verse 22, the soldiers' plan was to kill all of the prisoners. Well, that would relieve them of responsibility, right? Kill them all that were on, and lest any of them should swim away and escape. But the centurion, in verse 43, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land. Well, that's nice. But they were blown off course, basically saving their lives. And then a centurion was helpful. But the power of the wind is something that man cannot stop. Neither can a man contain the wind in any way, or even slow down. The power of God is represented by the wind. If you want an interesting read, look in the book of Ecclesiastes and go on your online Bible and type in grasping for the wind. And there are many examples of people grasping for the wind. Has anybody here ever successfully grabbed a hold of the wind by grasping for it? It shows what an empty effort it is, that we're not in control of the wind. So grasping for the wind is a senseless, a useless act. Now, if we go back to Acts 2 and starting in verse 1 again, and we reread it, the day of Pentecost had fully come. They were all with one accord in one place. And suddenly there was a sound from heaven as if a rushing mighty wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. This sound from heaven, the rushing mighty wind, was demonstrative of God's Holy Spirit descending upon these new believers on that special day of Pentecost. Let us now focus and embrace the wind from God, and we do that by maximizing our use of the Holy Spirit that God has granted to us.